This is the Geek Dads, the podcast of geekdad.com. This is episode 138. We can all spot Joss's house on Google Earth. Finally back. This is the Geek Dads, episode number 138. I'm Ken Denby, the Grand Nagus, publisher, editor at large for Geek Dad. It's been a little while, folks, so forgive us. We'll probably be reminiscing quite a bit over not having spoken virtual face to virtual face for quite a while, but I am very, very, very happy to be joined by Mr. Matt Blum and Mr. Jonathan Liu. Gentlemen, it's been far too long.
Yes, indeed.
It's been a really long time.
It has been. I feel like the prodigal son returning.
It's definitely good to have you back.
It's very good to be back. For the folks that, you know, if there's actually anyone who's going to listen to or watch this, because, you know, we've been gone since July and it's all my fault. I went to work for Make. I am now not working for Make anymore. And that's entirely of my own choosing. And I'm not going to go into too many details other than the job that I got brought on to do was not a job that was right for me. And so I decided to, be in control of my life again and have parted ways amicably with the folks at Make. And I'm going back to my previous existence as a civil engineer. And one thing that is going to allow me to do is to come back and be more focused on Geek Dad again and do podcasts again and hang out with my friends again. So,
hooray!
That's why I'm really happy that we're here to have this podcast tonight, because it's sort of marking, there are opportunities that come along in your life and you cannot pass them up. The promise of what I was going to get to do was amazing, and everybody who knows and loves the Make Make magazine, Make Repairs, and all that stuff, you know, would imagine that getting to go work for the company would be just the most tremendous experience and fulfilling and so forth. The issues that I ran into there were things that I did not feel able to surmount, and as such, no harm, no foul. I have learned a great deal about a lot of things over the last 5 months, including, my level of patience for some stuff and my ability, you know, where my limits are in terms of how much time I can put into a job and how much time it will take away from my family and things like that. And I had to make a difficult but very wise choice. And I'm feeling a whole heck of a lot of relief right now. I was so lucky that when I inquired back at my previous project, not only were they, you know, happy to have me back, literally the response was within 5 minutes of my emailing the person in charge saying, "Oh, perfect timing, set up a meeting." So
cool.
Basically, I got freaking lucky with that regard. I got to go out, take a chance on something. The something didn't work out the way I thought it was going to, and I'm landing safely. So I'm really happy about that.
You sowed your wild oats, as it were.
Not the metaphor I would necessarily associate with this, but yeah, I took a chance on something. I took the chance that you couldn't pass up, and then it didn't work out, and I'm back safe and sound, and so we'll be able to continue this wonderful endeavor and carry on. So, I am not going to come back as the editor in chief. Matt is doing a wonderful job as editor in chief. I'm going to be publisher and editor at large and continue to be focused on, you know, just keeping the energy up and hopefully finding advertisers and partners and just keep continuing to grow the world that is Geek Dad. and dealing with all the fun that goes along with that, and hanging out with people like Jonathan and Matt and all the other great folks involved with Geek Dad, and you know, coming back to the family, as it were. So, cheers, gentlemen.
All right, I have a drink. Cheers. Neither do I.
Cheers. I was going to get a drink, but then my computer was acting up. So,
what's been going on, guys?
Oh. Wow. It's hard to know where to start, really.
I know. I mean, it's been July, August, September, October. It's been nearly 3 months since we've had a podcast.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And while I've, you know, been on email chains lightly and so forth, you know, things appear to have been moving along reasonably well. It's probably a good time for me to be back because we can start kicking things like Halloween and the holidays into high gear and sort of build some stuff around those.
Yeah, the holidays should be interesting with Hanukkah coming so early this year.
Yeah, Hanukkah is like over the week that Thanksgiving is, right?
It's the first night is the night before Thanksgiving.
Right. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So it overlaps Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving, as they're calling it. Yeah. which they're saying actually won't happen again for something like 70,000 years.
Right.
That's freaky.
Something like that.
How does it move that much?
Well,
lunar calendar.
It's a lunar calendar, yeah, exactly.
So, all right. So it could move up to like 28 or 30 days or something, depending.
Pretty much, yeah. Well, and yeah. See, the way it works is the way they adjust for the difference between, you know, the lunar calendar and the you know, then the actual passing of the seasons is every. Oh, I'm going to get this wrong, but every so often there's a 13th month.
Right.
Right.
And it throws everything off when that happens, basically. And so basically it's when this happens to come really early, and Thanksgiving, by the way things work out, also comes late, say, in the month. Right. So it has to, it's, you know, those two things have to happen simultaneously. Yeah, that's never happened before in my lifetime, certainly. I can't remember. I don't know. They said the last time it happened was only actually like it wasn't that long ago. It wasn't like 70,000 years ago. But
yeah,
right.
The last
time. But Dan Shapiro, the Robot Turtles guy, he was talking about it because he's trying to get it out for the holidays. He says it's not going to make it for Hanukkah. And he made some comment about it. It's the, you know, the first time this has happened in, I don't know, he like, several hundred years, and something he said, and we know that because that's as far back as we have written records.
Of course,
or that's as far back as Hanukkah goes.
Of course, there was no Thanksgiving then, but that's okay.
Oh, Thanksgiving! It was Thanksgiving. It was this is as far back as Thanksgiving goes. As we bet, yeah. But then it goes back a little.
What do you mean? We've always had Thanksgiving.
300 years then.
Right. Well, it didn't become an official holiday actually until Lincoln.
Right.
Well, you know how they tend to usurp the pagan holidays that they came before. So it was, you know, the ancient turkey worshipping cults that were usurped and taken over. And so
right. The turkey being a North American bird, but yes,
right, exactly. Right. Well, you know, because the Romans were here and stuff.
Sure, they were.
The Nordic turkey worshipping cults.
Yes.
I mean, why else did they leave? You know, Denmark and Norway and stuff is because they were cast out.
It was like, have you been to Norway? No, I'm sorry. No.
I've been to Denmark, but no way. I've been to Finland. That was it.
Really?
I've eaten in a McDonald's in Helsinki. That's about it.
All right. Yeah, yeah. I'm sure there's a story behind that, but...
Yeah. Nothing that would interest anyone listening to this podcast, though.
Speaking of the Hanukkah thing, have you seen the Kickstarter for the Menorkey?
No.
It's a turkey-shaped menorah.
not a menorah-shaped turkey.
No, that would probably be bad, actually.
Well, it's like
genetic engineering got horribly awry. Yeah.
seven feathers on the plumage, and you light each feather.
Yeah, it's a clever little project, but you have to put in like $100 to get one, and I'm not willing to do that. I'm not willing to do that for something that
especially
I
if it's
use.
Not going
to
happen again for another 70,000 years.
Yeah, exactly. You can't use it again.
You're not going to get one.
So yeah, it seemed a little much. Just yeah.
It's doing really well though on Kickstarter.
I know.
Oh, it did. I guess it's already it funded it already.
Yeah, I think it already ended.
Okay. Yeah, I guess they would have to have in order to get it out done in time.
This is true
for Thanksgiving and Hanukkah.
Yeah, but it'll be fun having. We figure we're gonna have latkes as a side dish, you know, the turkey.
And you should always have latkes as a side dish.
It's true. There's nothing wrong. The law says you can't have latkes any time of year. It's true.
Yeah, yeah. And let's see, what you could.
I've never been more tempted to deep fry a turkey. It just seems appropriate. I mean,
deep fried turkey. Being a good geek, you know all the safety rules, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
No, I was trying to go something. Could you make like a dressing or something out of? Oh man! Oh my good! Jokes are going out there. What's the really bad wine?
Manischewitz.
Manischewitz. Yeah. Somehow use Manischewitz. The
you could, but why?
Well, it's a once in a lifetime
about a lot of
experience.
Yes, the Manischewitz is so.
You can also
bad.
Make a turkey-shaped menorah, but why?
Yeah, but see, at least that doesn't taste bad. It may be in bad taste, but it doesn't taste bad. But
two bad tastes that taste bad together.
Now, Manischewitz is so bad that, like, for Passover at my parents' house, we just use grape juice. Pretty much for the stuff where you're supposed to have the sweet red wine, yeah. Because it's just so nasty that we'd just rather have grape juice.
You know, there's somebody's got to come up with like an alternate version of Manischewitz that is really good, and they would corner a market. You know,
there is good kosher wine.
Oh, okay.
There actually is.
It's just the Thunderbird of kosher wine.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
It's the default. That's what most people know. But it used to be very hard. Like when I was a kid growing up, it used to be very hard to get any other kosher wine but Manischewitz. Now it's actually pretty easy. There's a whole lot of Israeli wines that get imported into the States.
And what, I mean, you know, other than probably a blessing by a rabbi, what else does it take to make wine kosher?
Not an expert, but I think that's pretty much it.
You can't put pigs in it.
Well, I'm wondering. I mean, there might be something to do with the fertilizer used to raise the grapes, or something.
It's for Passover, there's kosher and there's kosher for Passover.
Kosher prime, as it were.
Well, kosher for Passover is different because the Jews didn't have time to wait for the bread to rise, and thus had to have matzah, had to have unleavened bread in the desert because they were being chased by the Egyptians. You're not allowed to have any grain. If you're an Ashkenazic Jew, you can't have any grain at all. So you're not supposed to have.
That's why they drink Manischewitz. It's unleavened wine.
Well, but the thing is,
it hasn't been aged.
It has to be fermented, and just because the fermentation is actually what you're supposed to be avoiding. So of course, alcohol. It's the yeast. So you can't have beer. You can't have beer, for instance, on Passover. You're not supposed to anyway. So the wine has to be specifically done in a way. I mean, and I don't know exactly how it's done. I mean, I'm certainly far from an expert. I've never kept kosher in my life, but
you're a lapsed reformed Jew.
I'll eat a bacon cheeseburger. Okay. So, you know,
on Passover,
with beer,
with lobster sauce, you know, I mean, really, well, okay. Probably not, but theoretically I would.
The opportunity presented itself, you would not turn it down for religious reasons.
Precisely.
Right. Maybe for taste reasons, but
well, that's true.
Right.
Right.
Bacon cheeseburger with lobster on the side. How about that?
Yeah.
No. So let's see. The what's been going on? I mean, yeah, I've been really, really embedded in a lot of stuff lately that has kept my attention from the normal geek things. Although, all right, so my life is however being impacted by the government shutdown.
Mm. How's that?
I was supposed to go give a talk at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratories next week.
Oh, yeah.
and they're shutting down places, you know, parts of it significantly. We've had to decide to postpone. And what was going to be cool was I was going to get a chance to go see the ignition facility.
Right, right.
And you know, obviously there's been a minor kerfuffle about how the press interpreted the announcement of that little step they took with the fusion reactions and, in theory, got more energy out of a sort of proto-fusion reaction, a pre-fusion reaction, than they put in, which is sort of seen as, okay, we've kind of tipped the scale and we're almost, you know, we're getting closer and closer to a self-driving fusion reaction, which is kind of an energy holy grail, as it were. And it just would have been really cool to be able to go talk to some of those folks next week. But gosh darn it, government shutdown. And we can't talk politics on this podcast, so we'll go past that.
I did get my first Kickstarter update that referenced the government shutdown because there's a you know, container full of board games sitting in customs. You got people saying, I expected to be able to start shipping them now, but they're still in customs. You know, who knows how long, like how many people they have working through that, or if they have people working through that at all. So I expect I'll probably start seeing more of those in the coming weeks. You know, more of those announcements saying, my game's stuck in customs too. It's one more source of delays.
Oh, let's see.
Yeah, needless to say, I mean, I live in the D.C. area, so.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I don't work for a...
it's terrible to see lobbyists out panhandling.
Fortunately, I don't work for a government contractor anymore. I used to, but so my job hasn't been affected. But
yeah,
except that my commute is a little faster. You know, which is, you know.
Why is my phone ringing? My son knows I'm on a podcast, and he's calling me. I did my son's call.
I mean, I know a lot of people who are. Furloughed, quite a few people.
Okay.
And like, there's like deals all over the place. Like you go to DC, like lots of places will get, you know, have like discounts for people who are furloughed, things like that.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. And like, I went to see, a couple weeks ago, Paul and Storm versus Will Wheaton. They played at, a place called, losing my mind now. A place in Alexandria whose name has completely slipped my brain for some reason. Very famous place too. Anyway, there were, you know, they were like, you know, calling out to people who were furloughed and, you know, cursing the government because, you know, they're slightly liberalists.
As they might be wanting to do, yeah.
You know.
Well, all right. Let's see. Coming up with good topics here. As a family, the geekiest thing that's happened in the last couple of months is we have finally finished our binge watching of all of Supernatural and caught up to the current season.
I have not watched.
Which is a feat because it's just gone into its ninth season.
Oh wow! And when did you start binge watching?
I started casually watching about 7 or 8 months ago, and then my wife got into it too, and we just started doing it. And then the boys got into it too, so we've been, you know, watching it, you know, a couple nights a week and so.
My wife loves it. She's almost caught up through the eighth season. Once it appeared on Netflix, she started going through it.
Once it gets on Netflix, it's okay. It is a totally enjoyable show. I
couldn't get into it. Yeah. I just couldn't. I don't dislike it.
Yeah,
I just, you know, it's like I can kind of take or leave it, you know.
As a show, they've done an excellent job at building their mythology and having a lot of fun with it and staying pretty consistent with how they built the mythology and what the rules are, and then, you know, when they have to take it to the next level, doing that appropriately and making things that much dire. And, you know, if you could complain about anything, it's you know, once you get nine seasons in, the generation of any conflict between the two brothers kind of gets a little tiring after a while, that, you know, somebody didn't tell somebody something because they were trying to protect them, and then it causes a problem, and then, you know, so on and so forth. But just a ton of fun and a very interesting take on, you know, what started out as a monster of the week kind of show that very much evolved into the battle between angels and demons and Earth being caught in the crossfires, with the interesting twist that while demons are pretty much demonic and you know, terrible and do mean things to folks, angels aren't very nice. They're kind of they don't care about people so much as they care about winning. And so they don't have a lot, you know, not many of the angels took a lot of care about how, you know, humans would get hurt when they were doing what they needed to do. And so that's been really interesting, that, you know, it's an interesting moral take on it, or a different, you know, a little difference in what you've seen a lot. And, you know, a lot of the characters have been fun. A lot of people from other shows that you see, Amanda Tapping had a good run in it. And of course, Mark Shepard from Everything.
Yeah.
It has been,
his usual gets an awesome.
Well, song. Awesome. I mean, he's worth, I mean, the show's worth watching just for him, because, you know, he started out, I think, probably, I don't know, season 4, season 5, I'd have to go back and look at the details, as, like, the chief of the crossroad demons, so the types of demons that make deals for your soul, and sure. Eventually, through the various apocalypses that were started and stopped or derailed or whatever, spoiler alert, Lucifer was finally chained away in his own special padded cell, and Mark Shepard's character became the king of hell. And so he's been sort of the a big bad for a while, and he's just hilarious.
Seems apropos.
Really good.
And of course, Felicia Day has been on a number of times.
Felicia Day is a recurring character who is so much fun, and has brought added a lot of good geek cred to the show overall. And she's sort of become the little sister that the brothers never had. And what else? I don't know. I totally enjoy it. So I personally put it up there with a lot of, you know, it probably, my wife would probably kill me for saying this, but I'd put it on a level with like Stargate SG-1 in terms of a show that really has lasted and put out quality work and lived up to the, you know, created a great mythology and run with it, and with enjoyable characters and the leads. You know, I'd love to just hear these guys talk about the fact that they're going into their ninth season playing these characters. These guys have gone from like their mid-20s into their early mid-30s playing these same characters, and they still seem to be enjoying the heck out of it. So
they had a panel at New York Comic Con, I heard, which was well received. Yeah, well, so, I'm sure you can find video of it if you want.
Yeah.
I started watching Alphas recently.
So sad.
Dear Departed, yes.
It was a good show. That's what I do, right? I watch shows that get canceled because then I know that I've got like a season or two seasons and I'll be, I can manage that much.
Well, what if you really like it and then you're just ultimately disappointed that it's gone? You know. The classic example, of course, being Firefly.
Right. I mean, Firefly, I was late to the party. I started watching Firefly, it was already done, you know, when I started watching it, but I was able to watch the whole season at once, knowing already, right? I mean, I think when you go into it knowing that this is as much as there is, it's a little different.
Well, sure.
You can still, you can still follow, but you don't have that sudden like, wait, there's not going to be more.
It was pretty bad for those of us who were watching all along. You're like, they're doing what?
Yeah. So, but I know I'd was it Karina had written about it on Geek Dad? Somebody had
written
something about it. I think it was Karina, but I just had never gotten around to it, and I said, okay, I'm gonna watch this now and see how that is. So that's been fun.
No, it was good. It was very much, you know, quasi X-Men, but you know, they were playing up some the interesting, you know, first of all, the characters, the actors were excellent, and they, you know, it had promise. It had a lot of promise.
Yeah.
And then they killed it. Yep.
Yeah, then they killed it. Hey, have you guys seen, just because there was a great geek joke the other day, The Crazy Ones?
Yeah, I haven't. I'm not caught up on it, but I'm like 2 episodes behind. But
I've only seen the first three episodes.
Yeah, I've seen the first one.
The Crazy Ones is the half-hour sitcom by, what's his name, who did?
David E. Kelly.
Yeah, by David E. Kelly. Stars Robin Williams and Sarah Michelle Gellar as father and son who run an advertising.
Father and daughter.
Or father and daughter. Yeah.
That would be really interesting.
I don't think Sarah Michelle Gellar would be very believable as a guy. I don't know.
But so, all right. So I can't tell you the great, because they show outtakes in the end credits. And there was a great outtake of the last one. She dropped a very geek bomb that was just hilarious. But so just keep an eye out for it. I won't spoil that one for you.
Yeah. We tried watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and I don't know, our antenna was having trouble, and so it just kept glitching out, and it's like, oh well, I guess we're not watching it live.
You can go to Watch ABC.
Yeah, I noticed that. So
I've enjoyed it so far, and it needs to develop.
It does. Tonight's episode, which you haven't seen because you're on the West Coast, it was good. It develops Coulson a little bit more, which I thought was it was good.
Okay. It needs to find its place, but I think it's a high enough profile that they're not going to can it. In fact, they've already picked
up the rest of the season.
Yeah, they picked up the bottom half, so we'll get which was kind of
a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, I think so.
Considering the guest star they had and the previous episode.
Yeah. So. Plus, you know, there's so much going on. They just announced today that it looks like Marvel is developing at least 5 other shows, probably for online or, you know, Netflix type distribution.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how many of them actually make it, but yeah.
Right.
It'll be interesting.
And then the rumor right now for Ant-Man.
Oh, yeah.
Is either Joseph Gordon-Levitt or Paul Rudd.
Yeah, I hope it's Joseph Gordon-Levitt if that's the case, because I like Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
But, he's too much of a comedic actor.
Yeah, but is Levitt,
it shouldn't be a farce.
For who Hank Pym should be.
Depends on how they write the character.
Yeah. I mean, of course, they're going to make him a, you know, misogynistic wife beater too, so
probably not. They want to make him somewhat sympathetic, presumably.
You would think so. Yeah.
That would not be the way to go usually.
Probably not. Our other family guilty pleasure now didn't take quite as long to catch up on, but is Once Upon a Time.
I was not I saw some of the trailers for the new one, Once Upon a Time in Wonderland.
Yeah,
they're like, I don't know. Doesn't look like my. I like Alice in Wonderland, but it looked too. I don't know what it was.
I don't know. They are doing crazy and amusing things with the whole pantheon of fairy tale characters.
Mm-hmm. Well, and more to the point, Disney characters.
Yeah, well, that's definitely the starting place. It's very much the starting place, although they've thrown in a few curveballs that have been really
interesting. They've even got, like, Mulan in there. I mean, right?
They've had Mulan in there. They've had Aurora in there.
She's not really a fairy tale character. Yeah, that's kind
of... But the twists, funny. I mean, some of the twists now... All right, are you guys likely to watch this? Can I spoil this a little bit?
I'm not likely to watch it.
No, I watched the first season, but then I just... didn't get into the second season.
Okay, so all right, so you'll have known that Robert Carlyle is simply amazing.
No, he always
as Mr. Gold, you know, he's Rumpelstiltskin, the dark one. But then it also turns out that he's the Beast, as in Beauty and the Beast. He has the relationship with Belle, who is the one who's trying to turn him from being evil magic user into being a good person. So he is the Beast of Beauty and the Beast. And then because when he was the dark one back in the fairy tale land, he had this sort of scaly skin, he was the one who cut off Hook's hand. He's actually the crocodile. He's Hook's crocodile. And it was, and it blew my mind when I realized that, because for the whole time of the show, he's been dropping TikTok, you know, TikTok, Missy, time to go. He's been saying TikTok the entire show, and it led up to something that paid off like mid-season two, that he was actually the crocodile too. So they've been doing really funky little things like that, and putting things on their ear that crossover was a lot of fun. But then, if you really think about what they've done with it, there is sort of basically they're working with a concept of a fictional multiverse, because the Enchanted Forest, where all of the primary characters in Storybrooke come from, is actually separate and distinct from Wonderland, which is separate and distinct from Neverland, which is separate and distinct from, at one point, one of the people living in Storybrooke, who is like the doctor, is actually Dr. von Frankenstein, who had come from one land into the magical realm to get magically enchanted hearts to try and use, because he could never have a regular heart survive his experiment to try and revive, you know, to create his creature.
It's nice when things are in the public domain, isn't it?
Yeah.
you can just borrow them like that.
And so that's been really interesting. And then of course, at one point there, you know, the psychologist who lives in town, who is Jiminy Cricket.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's been established long ago.
Has a Dalmatian named Pongo.
Mm.
Who would, in theory, come from yet another fictional world.
Right.
So, the possibilities are rather interesting. And somebody did have a Star Wars ringtone, so you wonder...
Yeah, let's hope they don't actually put Star Wars characters. Yeah.
That might be taking a little.
That would actually be bad, I think.
But so for just that sake, I've been having fun with it, just because they're taking things and turning it on its ear to really sort of mix you up and have you not know who's going to be what and do, you know. And meld characters together, which is really interesting.
I was going to say, take that back. If they bring Jar Jar in and have him, you know, slaughtered mercilessly, then I'll watch.
There you go.
that I would watch. Or at least have his tongue cut out, you know.
Yeah. All right. Well, so let's say, all right. So you made it through season one. Maybe I can tempt you with this. So, so Rumpelstiltskin's son. Mm-hmm. Whom he lost through the magical portal,
mm-hmm.
whom we all figured we didn't know where he ended up. Bay, he's actually Neil, the guy who, basically, he's Henry's father.
Okay.
So Rumpelstiltskin is actually Henry's grandfather.
All right.
But the hole he fell through didn't go to the real world. It went to 19th century London of the Peter Pan stories. And it's not Peter Pan who's coming to take Wendy to Neverland. It's the evil shadow. And he protects Wendy and the boys by letting himself be taken to Neverland. So they play with stuff. It's fun. Anyway. That's my plug.
Oh, no, it's a clever show. Just, you know, so much time.
It's only so much time, and yeah, so much.
And it's the sort of thing that you kind of have to keep up with. You can't just kind of drop back in.
Yeah. Well, what else, guys? What have we seen lately? What's been exciting?
Not a movie, but there's the Sherlock Holmes exhibit that opened here at the Science Museum.
It's on tour.
It's on tour. It starts here in Portland. They're going to Columbus, Ohio next, and it says something like 10 U.S. cities before they go, you know, internationally.
I saw your article. I have to see that.
It's really great. I mean, it's you know, they collaborate. I guess they spent 4 years working on this thing. They've collaborated with the Museum of London and the, you know, Conan Doyle Estate in London and the U.S. And the what is the University of is it Minneapolis? So there's apparently a very, very large Sherlock Holmes collection.
Yeah.
In St. Paul or Minneapolis, that they've been able to borrow a lot of artifacts from. And so, you know, you go in and first thing you get is you actually get, you know, sort of, this is Arthur Conan Doyle's study or whatever, you know, it's his background and his life, right? As a, you know, as a doctor and, you know, his, professor in medical school who, you know, who inspired the character of Sherlock Holmes. They kind of get into a little more of that. And you get to see stuff like they have the, you know, original manuscript for Hound of the Baskervilles is on display.
Ooh, nice.
And then you go into the sort of the area of like, hey, here, this little setting of, you know, the Sherlock Holmes is London, right? So there's a little informational booths about, you know, ballistics and botany and photography and kind of the technology of his time. And then you get 221 Baker Street, of course, which is fun. You know, you just get a lot of stuff to look at, and there's this mystery. So there's a guy who's written some of the newer Sherlock Holmes, like sort of officially sanctioned, you know, Sherlock Holmes stories. And he was commissioned to write a new mystery for this exhibit. So you get the clues and you get this, you know, oh, this guy's been accused of murdering his family, you know, dumping their bodies in the Thames. So you are trying to piece together clues based on like, yeah, the police basically said, yes, this is what happened. And Sherlock Holmes is like, no, Lestrade's an idiot. You know, go figure out what really happened. And so you get a little bits of little, like, you know, little hands-on activities that you can do to piece together, you know, four sets of clues and say, okay, what do you think really happened?
Pretty cool.
And then at the end, they have all sorts of, you know, all the pop culture stuff, right? So you get to see props from, you know, the BBC Sherlock and the Sherlock Holmes movies and Elementary and some other things. So.
Oh, good. That's neat that they were able to collect from all.
Yeah. They didn't have quite as many from the BBC as, you know, that's our, they look like they have a bigger section of Elementary than they have of the BBC Sherlock. But
did they have anything from the old English adaptations from the 80s and 90s with Jeremy Brett?
I kind of had to rush through that part. I'm going to go back. Mm-hmm. Like I was there for they had a, you know, a sneak peek the day before it opened for media. And, I was able to be there for about an hour, but I had my baby with me, and sure. It's like, all right, I'm gonna kind of, you know, get a good overview and come back with the whole family later. So,
sure.
But it's definitely worth seeing, and you know, I'm not sure what other cities it's going to hit, but I'm sure it's going to be, you know, couple other major cities. I'm sure it'll make it out to the East Coast too.
I would imagine. Yeah. We have a couple of big cities over here.
Yeah, a couple. What they're all right next to each other. Because, yeah, you know. Yeah,
they all run together. And how do you tell when one stops, the other one starts?
Yeah. But that was a lot of fun.
That's cool. You know, I've heard, I have not seen it yet, but I've been hearing only good things about the Mythbusters on tour.
Oh, I saw them. I mean, it was a different tour. I saw them a year and a half ago,
mm-hmm.
or so. They were in Washington, and it was outstanding. I mean, it was so much fun. It was, you know, you're in a big, huge theater full of people, but you sort of feel like you're kind of hanging out with them, doing, you know, doing experiments and stuff. And it was really good. If you can go, I highly recommend it.
That's cool.
I highly recommend.
You see, they posted 10 minutes of them doing a study to compare four-way intersections with roundabouts.
Hmm.
And prove which one actually works better. Hmm. And it's not the American one.
Shocking. But, I mean, Americans aren't fantastic at driving in every possible way.
Not so much about the driving, it's about designing the interchanges.
Right. Well, there is a relationship one with the other, too. But
someday when we all have flying cars, it'll be fine.
Yeah. That would make it so much worse.
Yeah, I know.
So many people who can't drive in two dimensions, give them a third, really? Yeah, that's really what you want to do?
It's a very bad idea. Very bad idea.
Yeah. Only way to get the self-driving self-driving flying cars.
Mm. What could possibly go wrong? Recently, actually, I don't know if you've heard the NPR quiz show, Ask Me Another.
Haven't heard that one yet, no.
Oh, it's been on for a little while. It's like a quiz show, trivia. It's not like a news show, like Wait, Don't Tell Me. It's not like current news or anything. It's quizzes, puzzles, word games, all kinds of cool stuff. And what's really cool is their in-house musician, who also helps out with a lot of the puzzlers, is Jonathan Colton.
Yes, you know, I did know. I have heard about
that. Yeah, I posted about it on the blog when it started, just sometime late last year, I think. And, I got an email that they were going to be taping a show at NPR headquarters, which is in downtown Washington. And so we got tickets, because my kids love it, too, because we play the podcast of it in the car all the time. The kids love the show. So we surprised them. We got 4 tickets, and we all went to go see the show.
Nice.
Last week. And that was really awesome. Just so much fun. Although it's hard when you're actually seeing it live, because we're used to like playing and doing it in the car and, you know, calling out the answers. And of course, when you're in the audience, you can't do that.
So. Yeah. I got to go see Says You once, but besides that, I have never caught any of those other ones.
Yeah. We saw Wait, Don't Tell Me a couple of years ago when I was out here in Portland. That's, I guess, more than a couple of years ago.
I was wild when there was a period of a year or two when my dad was working on a project in Minneapolis, and he went down a couple of times to go see Prairie Home Companion, and actually got to sit on the stage at one point.
Oh, fine.
So it was total blast. That's such a big deal there.
Very
but,
cool.
But yeah, all right, guys. Well. What else we got? We've only been going for about 45-50 minutes. You'd think we'd have more to say after such a long break.
Well, I went to Gen Con, and then I went to PAX, and then I went to Wordstock, and I went to XOXO, and I went to the Portland Retro Gaming Expo.
Where's your boy? I went to World Mini Maker Fair.
Is that all?
Oh, and the Portland Mini Maker Fair. I went that
too. Yeah.
So my weekends have been pretty full.
That's good.
But it's been a fun summer.
Yes, I sadly could not make it to either New York Maker Faire or Comic-Con.
Comic-Con.
Yeah, but I am going. I'm going up to New York probably in a couple of weeks with my daughter for a birthday trip. Her birthday was actually yesterday. So.
Oh, neat. Very neat. Cool. Well, you know, you're probably just as good you didn't go to New York Comic-Con, because then, you know, they would have taken over your Twitter handle anyway.
Yeah, I know. That's so – I can't imagine who thought that was a good idea.
What was that?
They gave everybody first of all, they gave everybody, like, an RFID chip in their badges, which they were, like, tracking people with, which is a little weird to begin with. But they also, like, you had to, like, put in something so that they to give them access to your Twitter account.
It was an opt-in thing, but basically it gave them the ability to tweet on your account.
And they were tweeting they weren't just tweeting obviously like obvious fake messages. They were tweeting things that were obviously meant to look like real messages that people were sending about how cool Comic-Con was and such, and linking to it. And but the bizarre thing is, most of the people that they did this for were people who probably would have posted that anyway.
Yeah.
But of course, you do that up for them. You're going to just, what are you going to do? Piss them off. Who thought this in any way was going to be a good plan? I just don't get it. Why did nobody say, you really shouldn't do that? Or you should make it really explicitly clear to people that you're going to do that if they give you this access before you do it.
Right.
All right. This just in, The godfather of gummy bears has died.
The godfather of gummy bears?
Well, they don't say he invented them, but he was the like the owner of the company that when
the Haribo
started. Yeah. Hans Riegel.
Mm.
Doesn't mean we're not going to still have gummy bears, so.
The I saw Michael Hurst at Wordstock. He does like geeky songs. He's mm-hmm. got a bunch of different he plays for this, he has a band called One Ring Zero that's done a bunch of geeky albums. And he's got a song or a book called Unusual Creatures with songs for unusual creatures, which I think you wrote about. You wrote about Songs for Unusual Creatures.
Yeah.
A while ago.
That sounds fun.
In another life, yeah.
Yeah. he played the theremin and, you know, some other crazy instruments. And he was talking about the tardigrade or the water bear.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's trying to start a campaign to have Haribo make gummy water bears, because that would be great.
You know, I still have to listen to, hopefully later this week, Daniel Radcliffe was on Nerdist podcast, like the last run of the one before last, and supposedly goes on at length about his love for Tom Lehrer.
Oh, well, yeah, he's talked about that before.
Yeah.
And he did the entire Element song, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is very impressive, honestly.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I've only got like the first four stanzas, but that's cool. But what did I say? I don't remember. Oh, you know, there's I'm half tempted. So there's a an internet radio, I guess you would call them network. Out of San Francisco, completely independent, called Soma FM, S-O-M-A FM.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, they're not huge. I mean, they get, I don't know, 7,000 to 12,000 listeners at any given time. They do their most popular channel is one called Groove Salad, which is very much sort of down tempo and sort of, you know, quirky electronica and things like that, but they've got a couple other stations that are lounge music and indie artists and stuff like that. Mm. And totally, and they're all they're what's cool about them is that they are all listener supported. There's no advertising or anything. It's all people donating money every month. And so but I totally feel like I should pitch the guy. We should, and he says, you know, all of the stations, the one guy who runs it programs a couple of the state channels, and then everybody else, you know, there are a bunch of other ones like some alt country and some other things, and it's all volunteers putting together. And I would totally volunteer to program a geek music channel and put together stuff from Tom Lehrer to Colton to Proto Men to all the chiptune stuff to all of that. I think that would make for an amazing channel. The Hip Tracks channel, actually, you know.
Yeah, kind of. It's true.
So, yeah, I gotta do that in my copious free time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, so total, a little mind bender, but if you're aware, you knew she was in it, but we DVR'd Much Ado About Nothing and started watching it, and it is charming and darling and well done. And seeing the one woman who was part of Garfunkel and Oates in
there. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's so
Kate McKinney, yeah.
Right, right. She's so good,
too. Oh, no, sorry, not the
no,
other
one. No, no, no.
The other one.
Right,
the other one. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
She's an excellent actress, too. So
she is. I thought it was a really interesting choice to have her play Braccio.
Yeah.
To Braccio be a woman, which is not how the, of course, not the way yeah. the part was written. So.
But very, very enjoyably done. And
no, she's Conrad. She's Conrad, not Braccio. Anyway. Yeah. Yeah, I got the Blu-ray. I haven't actually watched it or the extras yet, but I wanted the extras, so that's why I got them.
I'd look forward to looking at those. That would be a lot of fun.
That's why I was born for that.
And you got to be able to, you know, just through watching the views from the backyard, you got to be able to, like, it should be easy to use Google Earth to figure out where Joss actually lives.
Probably.
There's a golf course down below, and
it's an amazing house. I love the scene at the beginning where Benedict and Claudio are having their discussion in what's obviously one of the girls' bedrooms. One of the girls' bedrooms. Yeah. The little cute stuffed animals all over the place. Never seen Shakespeare in that setting before.
I know. No, it was all really, you know, amusingly staged. And hey, Amy Acker is such a wonderful physical comedian.
Oh, she's fantastic.
The pratfall down the stairs and all of it.
And I loved the scene where Benedict's hiding himself.
Yes, outside, listening to everything.
Throwing himself outside, putting that tiny little shrub in front of his face as if that would actually hide him, yes. It was fantastic. That was, and my kids, took my kids to see the movie, and when it was in the theaters, too. They loved it, too.
Yeah. And, I'm always going to forget the actor's name. He's playing, he was like never mind. I can't come up with it.
The Prince?
Yeah, I think so. The Prince. Yeah.
Reed Diamond?
Yeah, Reed Diamond.
Yeah.
He does that phenomenally.
He really does. He made a very good Prince.
I mean, you have to have a certain amount of, you know, obviously experience doing Shakespeare and to be able to deliver, you know, to say the things, you know, it's all like speaking in metaphor. But it's like, it's almost all Dharma can.
Yeah. Well, and there's puns aplenty, of course.
And puns aplenty and stuff. But but being able to deliver that so well that you know, even if some of it goes past you get the gist of everything. And he just does such a wonderful job of that. I was so impressed with him.
Yes, that was very well done. I thought it was interesting. They eliminated the character of the Don, the Clark Gregg's character, the father,
yeah.
Leonardo. He's supposed to have a brother.
Oh, interesting.
Who's
well, supposed there's to not enough people there that weekend. Gregg was hilarious too.
He was not quite old, not really quite old enough for that part, but yeah. But that's okay. He's still fun.
The bit in the kitchen where he's like passed out, and then she says something, and he goes, yeah, yeah, okay. Just excellent. Haven't even gotten to Nathan Fillion yet, so I'm just
waiting. He just stole the show, man. I mean, he's fantastic. Let it be noted that I am an ass.
Yeah. Oh, he was. So we caught the most recent Percy Jackson film, but it came out like 2 months ago now. A little more, something like that.
Something like that.
And he was playing Hermes this time. He had a lot of fun with that.
I heard that. Didn't actually see it.
There was a scene. So, I mean, it's only like one scene, but at one point he's talking about how, you know, he's. I can't remember what the instigation for it was. It's something like that's just it's so very distressing and it makes me so sad. It's. Almost like having a show that only lasts for one season.
Cute.
Yeah.
Very cute.
Very funny. Very funny.
I like when they throw the little references in Castle.
Yeah. Yeah.
To Firefall. Yeah. Every now and then. Some of them very subtle. Some of them not.
Some of them pound you on the head. But yes.
Well, like the one with the Halloween episode where he comes out of the bathroom dressed as Mal.
Right.
Yeah. And the stutter says, you haven't worn that for like 5 years.
Phenomenal. Yeah. All right, guys. Next time we'll have an agenda. How about that?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. It'd be refreshing, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that we didn't do fine.
We did just fine. But we're getting back on the horse here, and gosh darn it, except for extreme emergencies or whatever else, there will be one in 2 weeks. And we're going to make this happen. So it has been lovely talking with you gentlemen today.
No, it's been great fun.
Good to have you back.
And for the 3 or 4 people who will actually listen to this, thank you so much for paying attention whatsoever. But thank you. It's nice to be back and sort of hopefully, getting back into the mix of things and really hanging out with the geeks again, which is where I need to be. So, Matt, thanks so much.
No, you're very welcome, and thank you, and welcome back.
Yay, Jonathan, so good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you.
I've got so many games to play. I have been totally hooked on Small World 2 on the iPad for the last couple of weeks.
It's a lot of fun.
It works really well. We gotta make some time for some online games.
We should do that.
Yeah. Okay, plan on that. Otherwise, folks, thank you so much. This has been The Geek Dads, episode number 138. I'm Ken Denmead, Grand Nagus, publisher, editor-at-large, Geek Dad. He's Matt, editor-in-chief. He's Jonathan. Are we still like calling you senior editor?
I don't know. I'm like shadow editor.
Shadow editor. Ooh, I like
sure, it. We really should give you an official title like again.
Shadow editor. Stealth editor. No, shadow editor works really well. That's good. And folks, thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time. So long.
So long.
Bye. Geek Dad.